forest, the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to live shows on our past on our iPod Ready archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. Now, if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen via satellite. Just go to the website for details. We're very proud to have with us Rick Reyes, a veteran of the war in Iraq. Rick is a 29-year-old who was born to parents, immigrants from Mexico, and he grew up in Boyle Heights area of the East Los Angeles part of the country. He joined the Marine Corps and served in the Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. He is now based on his experience in Afghanistan and given President Obama's promised troop surge, he thinks the U.S. should at minimum rethink the Afghanistan war. In April, Rick Reyes, testified to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee alongside other veterans of the Afghan war. Hello, Rick. Welcome to our show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
That was a very momentous occasion when you testified, Rick. Can you tell us some of the circumstances surrounding the testimony that you gave before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and why it was such an important day to do it?
Yeah, you know, the reason why that day was so important was because 38 years ago to that day, a young John Kerry delivered his statement of discontent concerning the Vietnam War. So 38 years later, I was able to deliver my statement of the discontent with the Afghanistan occupation, and I was able to deliver that statement in front of Senator John Kerry, who is now the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Yes, he was. And when you were giving your testimony before former Senator Kerry, did he respond to your statements in a manner that you were found acceptable?
Well, there was a panel composed of five veterans, four Afghan veterans, and one Vietnam veteran, which was who is Andrew Vasevich, who was a colonel in the Vietnam War. So we all gave our statements, and then you know, we went on to a Q&A after we've all delivered our statements. So it was hard for him to give an individual reaction to each of the panelists.
And what was the purpose of the testimony to the Foreign Relations Committee?
Well, I got involved with a group called Brave New Foundation, who was pushing for congressional hearings on the current Afghanistan occupation. It's a campaign called the Rethink Afghanistan campaign. And we sent out petitions in order to receive these congressional hearings. So once we were able to get the numbers that we needed for the congressional hearings, then they set a date where I was invited to go speak. And the whole purpose was to think of a different way to approach the Afghanistan occupation, which is why we call it Rethink Afghanistan. Just the momentum behind the current escalation is too great, and the amount of resources that we're investing into this occupation, you know, we're just investing a huge amount of resources without having a real successful strategy currently going on the ground in Afghanistan.
You know, when you were going to war with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda forces, excuse me, were you Were you prepared for what you found in Afghanistan, Rick?
No, not at all. One of the first issues you run into on the ground is just not being able to distinguish the terrorist members or suspected terrorist members from the general population. That was the biggest issue when you hit the ground. There's just no way to know who's who, and in return you have to kind of treat everyone as a suspect, which is just a very, very poor strategy.
Was that the strategy that they went, that they prepared you to go into with?
Well, no, it wasn't. When you train, you run these exercises where you're attacking objectives. So once we hit the ground, they had these teams called Provisional Reconstruction Teams, where a group of troops are going door to door, basically trying to gather intelligence from the local population on where suspected terrorist members could be located, and in return we're offering aid. So when you're dealing with a population that doesn't have many resources and you're offering aid in order to receive some intelligence, they're going to tell you whatever they need to tell you in order to continue receiving this aid. So the strategy, it's very flawed. You're asking, it's a recipe for disaster, and many times we are dealing with that disaster.
Rick, what was your status when you went to Afghanistan in the military? As far as your rank, yes.
In Afghanistan, I was a Lance Corporal. In Iraq, I was a corporal.
Okay, and here as a corporal on the ground, going through, you realized it didn't take you very long to realize what a flawed situation it was, and that the strategies that were being implemented in Afghanistan were flawed. It didn't take long, did it?
Well, it didn't take long at all. Immediately you know there's something wrong, but you have so much faith in your command and in our military that you really don't. You don't question it, and you just do as you're told. You're following orders. You figure that they know what they're doing, so I shouldn't question it.
Well, all right. Then let me ask you this. People don't question it, and I thoroughly understand the reasoning behind that. But when you found out and when you realized that this was a flawed situation, that things were not happening in a constructive manner, that the war was not being conducted with methodologies that were going to at least bring cohesion to the situation, let alone peace. What did the commanders do? What did they know? If you knew that immediately, how did they handle it?
Well, the commanders weren't on the ground, and when they were on the ground, they weren't implementing these military operations that we as infantry riflemen are implementing. So they don't see they're not there to experience the ineffectiveness of the strategy. So they continue to implement these strategies that just aren't working. We're not accomplishing the mission of keeping America safe and of securing Afghanistan. We're not accomplishing those missions. So,
and those were the missions that you were supposed to be accomplishing.
Exactly. So now, you know, a few years later, after I've discharged, I've realized that, you know, being a veteran, we must take responsibility for what's occurring right now on the ground. And I know we're not keeping America safe. I took an oath to protect my country, and at one time I put my life in danger to protect this country.
Mm-hmm.
So just because I discharge doesn't mean that I'm still not willing to do that, which I am. So it's my responsibility to speak out and create this awareness that our strategy isn't working and we're not keeping America safe.
But this has nothing to do with your patriotism to your country. You are, because many people believe that many of the veterans that speak out against the war basically are traitors.
Yeah, to some extent that is the notion.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because you are willing to sacrifice for your country. You just believe that this is an ineffectual war. It's
exactly.
Not working. Okay, do you believe that because of the poor strategy and the poor methods that are being implemented in Afghanistan, probably very similar to Iraq, do you think that we are actually causing more death among American soldiers than is necessary?
Well, here's the problem with that. If you're entering into a situation where you cannot distinguish who the enemy is, then they have the upper hand. We allow ourselves to become vulnerable to attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, definitely, where we are risking lives for an unnecessary or for a failed strategy. And to me,
for a failed strategy.
Yeah, and it just doesn't make any sense. It's just not logical. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, you know, during the course of this, you know, we have our first question from one of our listeners. Mike in California asks, how much abuse against Iraqis and Afghanistani citizens did you see by military? Were there things like racial slurs, disrespect, and physical abuse apparent?
Well, we're not prepared we were very unprepared to enter into these countries. For one, we didn't have a translator that was able to communicate with the local population. We would rely on translators coming from the population. We didn't have our own translators. So, and these translators that we did receive were maybe one per company, which is a company is composed of maybe, maybe over 100 Marines. So one translator for over 100 Marines that are continuously running operations, it's just not enough. So most times when we implement these raids, or search, whatever you want to call them, they were conducted mostly at night,
mm-hmm.
with very poor visibility. Already going into a situation where you're already expecting to run into danger because that's the information you've been fed. The intelligence that we're receiving. You know, we received the intelligence, like, these are where the terrorists are located, you know, so we'd run our operations to go locate and capture. And along the way, a lot of innocent people do get hurt. There's a lot of collateral damage. So every time these military operations are implemented, then there's always a factor of innocent casualties or just someone that's innocent becoming affected that shouldn't have happened in the first place. It's very poor intelligence.
Well, so here we are. You have you lack the skills to be effective. You have no translators. You are supposed to be everybody to you at that point is an enemy. Or at least this is what you've been told, how to react. And you're going into homes. Are you breaking into homes, or are you being invited into these homes?
No, we're not being invited at all. We surround the property or the point of interest or just the location where these suspects have been identified as being in, and then we, you know, from all angles, doors, windows, doesn't really matter, just however we can enter the premises. And obviously you want to enter with enough speed where we don't allow them time to react. So, you know, we're dragging people out of bed, we're tying them up, we're detaining them, and then... You know,
and in many cases, you're not even understanding how to talk to them either. They don't even know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's that lack of communication.
And at that point, how do they expect you to get information if you don't even speak the same language? It seems kind of silly to me. Let me ask you something, Rick. When you guys were amongst yourselves and at night and, you know, sitting around thinking about the, you know, what was going on, did you ever discuss these things with your fellow soldiers?
To some extent, it's just very difficult to do. Once we do question, well, what happened to the, you know, that we get the right guy, and most oftentimes it's always a no. At that point, you just become very, there's just this huge disappointment.
You become another person, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when you discharge, a lot of the guys that I served with, they kind of just want to forget about everything that happened. They suppress everything they went through and just pretty much put it, you know, they just don't want to deal with it again. So, you know, while you're there, you really don't discuss these things.
And may I ask you why you decided that wasn't enough for you, that you needed to speak out?
Once I discharged from the Marine Corps, I began my own business in the real estate and mortgage market, and obviously it's tough. It's a very tough market right now. So I started, you know, I'm with the people where I'm helping them find a home, finance the home, and then to be able to witness so many people going through these economic hardships and losing their homes. And then added to that, these occupations, it came to the point where I said, you know, enough is enough. You know, how many more innocent lives are we going to destroy for political interest and profit?
Mm.
And at that point...
Go ahead.
I had to take responsibility for what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan and speak out.
That must be pretty tough on you, isn't it?
Well, yeah. You know, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. But
how does your family feel about you speaking out like this?
Well, I have their support. You know, a lot of the guys that I served with, I have their support too. I basically, you know, I asked them, I mean, we're all there. You know, I mean, you have some discontent, you have some concern, you know, let it out. You know, let it out. We have to take that responsibility. As veterans, we have to take that responsibility for what's happening on the ground and do something about it. We've been running military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq for 8 years now with no real results. You know, something's got to change.
You know, one thing I find that to be very interesting, Rick, and I'm sure you'll probably agree with me on this, is that when you're in the war front, when you are there and you are, I've heard this from so many of the veterans that we have spoken to on our show, people that I have talked to off the show, and I've asked them, I says, you know, why do you do what you do, even many times knowing that this is not right? And they say, we do it to stay alive. We do it for our fellow soldiers. When you're there, it's about keeping yourself alive and keeping your team alive and surviving it. Now, in order for us to do that, you obviously have to take the actions, and you do have to kind of shut down and become this other person, this conditioned soldier that you were conditioned to be. And when you come home and you don't speak out, you're allowing your fellow soldier to die because of your lack of speaking out. So what's the difference if we save them there, if we allow them to not die while we're there, but when we come home and we ignore what's happening on the ground, aren't we allowing them to die all over again?
And you're absolutely right. There's this, being a veteran, you hold on to this belief that or this faith in our military and our government that it's very difficult to let go of once you discharge. And a lot of veterans can't let it go, or they just want to hold on to that belief and continue the course of the mission, whether they're there or not.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. I mean, I guess if you let it go and you haven't healed yourself from the wounds of what happened to you there, you have to really face your own demons at that point. And without help, I don't think a lot of people can really do that, can they?
No, they can't. There has to be a substantial amount of support. And, you know, veterans are a very strong voice that can really make a difference in the current occupations. And, you know, we need that support to be able to speak out. And
mm-hmm.
you have to do a lot of soul searching and come to the realization that, you know, just come to the realization that even though perhaps while we were there, we didn't accomplish the mission, but doesn't mean that we can't still make a difference.
Exactly. Well, I congratulate you. I think I absolutely believe that if you're a soldier and you really are interested in the best interest of your fellow members of your unit, and you come home and you don't speak out, then you're no better than the Taliban. At that point, I mean, and that's unfortunate to say, but you're allowing others to die when you know that this is a war that's non-winnable. We have a question from Lacey in Iowa. Lacey asks, do you think the Iraqis and Afghanis hate Americans so much now that the U.S. is fighting a losing war and should just leave?
Well, in Afghanistan, 80% of the population does not want U.S. or coalition forces. They don't want U.S. or coalition forces in Afghanistan, 80% of the population. We are creating the motive for these people to turn against us. We're not winning the hearts and minds. I mean, our military operations are counterproductive, and we're getting the opposite results of what we're trying to accomplish. So over the years, the approval rating for the coalition forces has dramatically decreased. So yeah, you know, they don't want us there. They don't want us there, and we're not accomplishing the mission of securing America. We're actually creating more resentment towards the U.S.
Were war crimes committed, to your knowledge, while you were there?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, because our military operations were conducted through neighborhoods. So, you know, there was a lot of unfortunately
everything was against civilians.
Yeah, you know.
I guess if attacking civilians or breaking into homes and demanding information in a foreign language and then oppressing them, you know, sounds like a war crime to me, but, you know, I don't know. I guess, you know, I do understand that there is this identity that soldiers take on when they're there, when they're on the ground, when they are trying to survive and just trying to make sense of the moment at hand. But I absolutely agree with you. I don't understand. I don't have a high understanding of why people come back and just allow the brutality to continue, allow their own men to die for lack of response from the veteran community. You know, either we are there to help each other survive or we are not. And if I'm an American, I want to come back and do the same thing. Let me ask you this, Rick. Do you believe that America, as a military necessity, I mean, we don't have the draft and many people are fighting the draft tremendously. But so, do you believe that America, as a military necessity, is nurturing a system that kind of creates a need for people to enter the military with low employment, high educational prices? Are they kind of creating groups of people that need to go to the military to survive?
Yeah, definitely. Through these economic times, yeah, people are turning to the military for economic survival.
Mm.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, and we have a question from Carl in Texas. Do you feel that President Obama will escalate the Middle Eastern conflict to other countries and beyond? And if so, what can be done to stop it?
Well, I want the administration to succeed. I want our current president to succeed. I want him to have the utmost success. He himself on 60 Minutes said that we need to have an exit strategy. He also said that he wants to take a more diplomatic approach into these conflicts. A troop escalation and the supplement that was just passed, they're not signs of a diplomatic approach, and we still don't have an exit strategy. It's gonna roll over into other regions of the Middle East, and we're not gonna have the resources or the manpower to be able to continue these conflicts. So it needs to stop. It needs to stop before it gets worse, and before we go into this huge quagmire we're not gonna be able to get ourselves out of. We need to create a public awareness and let the public know that these strategies aren't working. So we need to create an awareness that the current strategies in Afghanistan are not working.
Well, I know you said that five altogether or five outside of yourself that testified that day at the hearing?
Five altogether.
Okay.
Five altogether, but unfortunately, I was the only veteran opposed to the escalation. Everybody agreed that the current strategy isn't working, but I was the only one opposed to the troop escalation. There has to be a more. This can't just be solely relied on troops. Troops cannot build countries. We are trained to attack. We are trained for combat. We're not trained to reconstruct roads, much less an entire country.
Well, so how much of what you did back there was reconstructive, and how much of it was destructive? Because war is destructive by nature.
That's exactly my point. We're combat troops. We're not peacemakers. We're not diplomats. We're trained for combat. So there has to be another component to the current strategy implemented in Afghanistan. So, and then the funny thing is that even after we delivered our statements in front of the Foreign Relations Committee, one of the other panelists came up to me afterwards and thanked me for delivering my statement and said to me that we all feel the same way you do, but for some reason no one's speaking out about it. And that's because, you know, you don't want to, yeah, there is that stigma that if you do speak out,
that somehow you're a traitor to your country.
Exactly.
And that you're making the country weak, and you're showing weakness in light of the war, and that is unacceptable. Do you really believe any of that stuff?
No. I mean, if we really rethink the Afghanistan occupation, we're going to make our country much stronger, because the current strategy is that's what's causing us to become weaker and more vulnerable.
And after
the hearings, I was able to visit with a lot of members of Congress and their staff, and I'd say about 99.9% of them agreed with what I had to say. But again, for some reason, they didn't want to oppose the administration. They wanted to give the administration a chance. Even one individual or one member in Congress said to me, that they didn't want to oppose the administration during its honeymoon stage. As thousands of lives are in question, that's the way they justify the current escalation and passing the supplemental. They just didn't want to oppose the administration during its honeymoon phase.
So they didn't want to rock the boat.
That's exactly what they said.
I don't know anymore. Sometimes I wonder if I have faith in any administration after some of the blunders that we've seen. But isn't that exactly what happens when you become an administrator of a nation such as the United States? You're the one that's supposed to catch the rocking of the boat?
Yeah, you know, the state belongs to the people. The people does not belong to the state. We shouldn't fear government. Government should fear its people. So in order, you know, for them to not want to oppose the administration, it's like, so then what's your job? If you're not speaking on your discontent. You can be supportive of our government. You don't have to agree with all its policies. And I just don't happen to agree with this one.
Right.
I want the current president to succeed.
Well, you're hearing it here, folks. Here is what seems to be, in all likelihood, a very stable young man that just doesn't agree with the way we're doing things. You know, I mean, I just find that to really, because, you know, everybody that, you know, comes back, you know, when you start talking, these are just kids, they don't know what they're talking about. You know, there's so much minimalization, Rick, of the people that stand out and advocate a different approach to what we obviously know after 8 or 9 years isn't working. I mean, it just isn't working. It's been 8 years, going on to 9 years,
yeah.
And this stuff is not working. And here we've gone through two administrations. We are going into our third administration, and now we're not supposed to rock the boat. I think that President Obama is a big boy, and I think that when he took a country that was in war, a nation that was in war, and challenged the world to become the president of that country, that he had the obligation of having an air sick bag with him, as far as I'm concerned, when he went into the administration. Now, I agree with you. I think you can be loyal to your country and disagree. I think you can be loyal to your troops and to your soldiers and honor your country and support your country and defend your country. But you have a right to tell them when we're there and it's not working. We've got a lot of questions here from our audience. I'm going to take one more question before we go on a break. Susan in New York asks, what do you feel when you see your returning brothers in arms who are disabled physically and or mentally with PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome?
You know, if we're not, we're all aware of the consequences of war. We're very, very aware of them. We know what happens while we're in combat. This isn't a war. It's an occupation. So the consequences of these current conflicts, it's not worth it. The amount of people the amount of lives we're destroying, it's not worth it. All these guys that are coming back injured, with missing limbs, you know, some of the guys, you know, they say, you know, we all gave some gave all. It's not worth it. It's just simply not worth it. There's indirect consequences, and that's when we bring the fight back home. With a lot of guys dealing with PTSD and TBI, the high suicidal rate. I mean, these guys cannot live with the guilt of the damage they've caused in these occupations, so they're taking their own lives. The morale is substantial. It's dramatically low. We have a very low morale. Where we're stretching our guys out over two, three, four, up to four tours. I mean, the psychological impact that takes on you, it's significant. It's beyond what we can imagine. It's very unnecessary, and it's just not worth it.
Are we friends to our soldiers in the United States, Rick?
Are we what? I'm sorry?
Are we friends to our soldiers? When we allow this to happen, when we allow them to go return time after time, and stretch them to the point of suicide in some cases, do we become friends or do we become enemies of our own soldiers?
Well, maybe, you know, we become enemies without that intention. You know, a lot of people tell me, you know, we have to support our troops. Well, we support our troops by not sending them into harm's way. That's the best way to support our troops. It's not a just cause.
Well, I think, and we're going to take a break right now. I think on that note, what I think we're doing is, if we were actually fighting a war, but like you said, we're just occupying nations at this point, and occupying nations isn't I don't know anywhere in the manuals that soldiers were supposed to be occupiers. That they were supposed to be defending our nation and defending our borders, and we're in somebody else's borders and we're occupying their space. We're going to be right back with Rick Reyes, one of our brave veterans against Afghan and the occupation in just a moment, folks. Thank you very much.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
In our Constitution, the Founding Fathers laid a path to an economy that should have kept Americans free and prosperous. How we the people were tricked off that path into a world of debt and deception reads like one of the great mystery novels of all time. American Free Press compares author Ellen Brown's new book, Web of Debt, to an eye-opening thriller that will leave you feeling like Neo in the Matrix. In Web of Debt, the mysterious and often shocking origins of today's ultimate financial crisis are exposed. Starting with its distant beginnings to its present disastrous climax, as the reader is shown that the way to restore America's true wealth has been with us all along. Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, to see how America's money and future can become by and for the people once again.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
One bright sunny morning.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief on the fence, I saw my people.
Thank you for sticking around. We're back with our guest, Rick Reyes. Rick is what I consider to be one of the bravest kind of soldier that we have in America today. He's the kind of soldier that's not afraid to protect and defend his country and to protect and defend his fellow soldiers even when he returns by speaking the truth. Thank you, Rick, for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
We've got a couple of questions here going on. Fred in Canada. Or, I'm sorry. Well, since I already said Fred, I'll get back to Sherry's question. Fred, in Canada, did you notice significant drug addiction amongst the soldiers while you were there?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good thing.
That's
a good thing. I mean, obviously, we hear so many stories, we don't know anymore what to believe and what not to believe, do we?
Yeah, no, I've never had that problem. I never experienced that.
Well, good. Sherry in Michigan asks, as troops will be redeployed to Afghanistan from Iraq, does he expect more Marines to speak out as he is doing?
Do I expect more veterans to speak out?
Yes.
I hope so. I hope so. That's one of the goals, to be able to invite more veterans and share their discontent. They don't need to voice a strong... I've always said you don't need to voice a strong opinion. If you have any discontent or just any concern with the current occupations, then voice it. You know, let it be known. And then that just becomes empowering in itself, where they'll be able to, just to speak out just that much more. I hope so. I really hope so. I've invited other veterans to join me on this movement, and 11 veterans altogether were able to go lobby to Congress before they voted on the supplemental, and we were actually pushing the McGovern bill, which requires an exit strategy, and I think that's imperative. To be able to have an exit strategy, especially when we're committing so many resources into these occupations, you need to have an exit strategy. You need to know what you're doing. There has to be a clear direction and a sense of mission. You don't send in an abundance amount of troops and invest so much funds into a conflict and then try to figure out what we're going to do with it. You need to know that first.
Rick, Eric in Arizona asks, and this is a very important question for a lot of people. I know this has caused a lot of controversy lately, and I think this has already shaken the boat for President Obama. How does Rick feel about the non-release of the torture photos by President Obama, would it really put your troops in jeopardy?
You know, that's difficult to answer. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Aren't your troops already in jeopardy, though, there? By the actions?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I can't imagine anything being worse than somebody, at every turn of the hat, somebody wanting to kill you. So, I how much worse can it possibly get?
Yeah, the troops are already in danger. Yeah, they're in constant danger of not knowing. There's just no way to know at what time are you going to be attacked. There can be a guy coming home from work and then goes into his house, reaches for an AK, and then just starts letting away. I mean, there's just no way of really telling. You can't. There's a lot of stuff you just don't see coming. So they're in danger now.
Oh. Arthur in Louisiana asks, does Rick work full-time as a peace activist, or does he have a regular job, and if so, what does he do? Well, he actually kind of addressed a little bit of that, but maybe you'd like to reiterate, Rick.
Yeah, after I discharged from the Marine Corps, I got into the mortgage business, and I didn't agree with the way the company I was working for was running their practice. So after a few months of working with that company, I decided to walk away, open up my own company, and practice on the belief of responsible lending. So that's how
Now there's something you don't hear a lot of these days, is there?
No, I mean, yeah, you need. I know we have a very, very
we need
bad
a lot
reputation.
Of that these days.
Yeah, we have a very, very bad reputation, but there are some good mortgage brokers out there, and I happen to be one of them, because people still need help and they still need to, you know, fund their loans. So that's how I pay the bills. Although recently a lot of my activism work has been taking over my life, which is okay, but that's what I do for a living.
Let me ask you, do you technically really consider yourself to be a peace activist, Rick? I know some of the statements that you've made on the show have been that one of them you said that you had no problem with defending your country, but you didn't believe that being an occupying force was in defense of your country or in the best interest of your country. So you're not necessarily opposed to fighting for your country, are you?
No. Well, I don't consider myself a peace activist. I'm not anti-military. I'm not anti-war. I do believe in securing our country and fighting for our country when it's necessary. It shouldn't ever be our first. We should always use war as a last resort, not as our first option. Like I said, you know, at one point I was willing to give my life for my country, and I still am. I'll protect my country. I just don't agree with the way I just don't agree with the current Afghanistan occupation or the one in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you see a lot of, have you actually been in Iraq, Rick?
Yes, I served in Iraq.
So are you seeing pretty much the same thing across the board in both countries?
Yeah, you know, the way just these PRT, well, these PRT teams, yeah, it's the same strategy. We're trying to gather intel from the local population with very little resources, and in return for this intelligence, we're offering aid. This intelligence, most of the time, is false. But by the time we figure out that it's false information, so much damage has already been done, and it's just, you know, it's too late.
Well, not only is it false, but a lot of times the people that are some of your translators have actually been paid off to feed you false information. Isn't that true, too?
Yeah, the the translators are also being compensated for their intelligence.
So it's in their best interest to give you anything you want to have.
To continue receiving that compensation, yes. They want to continue being employed. So it is in their best interest to keep giving us information. And just most oftentimes it just results in being false information. But at the time, there's just no way to prove it.
Mm.
If they're telling you, you know, that these guys are here, then we're going to run with that.
You're going to act as if they were here, and you're going to do whatever it takes to be there.
Right.
Louise in Texas asks, did Rick find a lot of Congress or Senate members in D.C. who were sympathetic to his testimony, such as Maxine Waters, John Kerry, et cetera?
They agreed. They always agreed with me, and they knew. They said, you know, you're right. But for whatever reason, they just didn't want to oppose the administration. They wanted to give the administration a chance to succeed. They wanted to have faith in the administration. If mm-hmm. you want to give the administration a chance, then we should seize the momentum in the current escalation. You know, pause, create a pause in that momentum and allow for that success to occur. And then come up with a successful strategy that will work.
Do you think a successful strategy is possible in light of everything that's gone on and in the drama that's being played out so intensely right now?
Well, while I was there, there was a lack of intel. There just was very, very, or no intel. If there was strong intel, if they're gonna, you know, if we found a point of interest where Taliban's members were located, then the mission can be successful. But that intel isn't there, so the mission becomes unsuccessful. So if there's strong, reliable intel, then there could be if our mission is to locate Taliban forces, then we need the intelligence to be able to allow that to happen. If that's the mission there.
Hmm. Can I ask you something, Rick? You were there. You were both in Afghanistan and you were in Iraq. You have since understood what is not working. What would an exit strategy look like to you?
Well, there has to be a reconstruction component that isn't supplied by the troops. There has to be a civilian effort, maybe more NGOs, just another component that isn't military driven. The supplemental, members of Congress told me that the supplemental was for aid. But when we first got to Washington, we found out that only 5% of the supplemental was actually going to aid, and the rest of it was going to military operations. By the time we left, it might have risen to, I think, 10%. I'm not sure. I think we're asking for 20% of it to go to aid, then the other to military operations. So there has to be. It seems like all the attention, they want a strong military component, and that's not the way we're gonna win in Afghanistan.
Well, let me ask you something. Did you actually, yourself, engage in any kind of rebuilding projects?
In Iraq, there was a few. Well, I take that back. After running these operations or after running these missions, and then, you know, after the missions, we found out that we didn't get the right guys or whatever, then, yeah, we'd compensate the house or the people, the family, with aid by replacing things we might have broken with money or food.
What about the lives that were taken?
Yeah, I mean, just you can't replace that. You can't take that back.
Yeah. Well.
And those were the reconstruction efforts that I participated in.
And that's why you're speaking out today.
Right.
Well, I think you're an amazingly brave young man. I wish you all the luck in the world. We're going to call it a wrap this evening. Seth has informed me that our time is up, and, you know, we could have gone on and talked about this for 100 years. All I want to say to you, Rick, is please keep up the good work. Your fellow soldiers depend on people like you to tell the truth about what's happening, even if they're not brave enough to do it themselves. Not only that, the people of Afghanistan and the people of Iraq are desperate to end this occupation and get on with their lives. So thank you. Thank you for being with us tonight, and thank you for your hard work.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And tell your daughter she was absolutely wonderful, like my granddaughter was. Thank you, girls. You were great tonight. And have a great evening, Rick.
You too. Thank you.
Tonight, folks, we'll see you all next week, Tuesday night, for our next interview. And let the people speak.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.